Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
I heard on the Les Grubbs thing that the Bears are picked to win against the Green Bay Packers.
Wait, you heard where?
But I listened to Les Grubbs thing. I talked.
Oh, hell yeah.
Oh, hell yeah. Let's spend Christmas together. That's what Bruce Levine and I have done this morning. We do it because we're American heroes. We're here for you. And now joining us is a broadcasting legend. He is about to celebrate his 50th year or start his 50th year. I don't know what, but it's been a long damn time. And he rarely sees daybreak. So here we are with him. Joining us on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline, Alpamonte Ford in Melrose Park, he is Les Grobstein. Grobber, how are you this fine Christmas
Bailey
morning?
Bailey Snavidad, gentlemen.
Excuse me?
You didn't have to excuse yourself. I do actually see the sun come up every morning. And now that I get to do the show from home here, I don't have to even waste time in the car or anything along that line.
Yeah, that is part of a beautiful thing. Les Grobstein, our overnight host on The Score. So is it beginning your 50th year come December 29th?
No, it'll be 50 years to the date on December 29th, which is next week. When I did my first ever broadcast, it was a game between Northwestern and Duke. And in those days, there was no guy named Mike Krzyzewski with them at that point. Bucky Waters was their coach. And then we had to do a game the next day against North Carolina. And they had a young coach named Dean Smith, you kind of have heard of. And they had a young player on that team that you probably heard of, too, because he used to coach Seattle as well. And, of course, the Bulls went head-to-head with his Seattle team. And that was, of course, in 96 when they played Seattle Supersonics. Today, of course, we know they're the Oklahoma City Thunder. But right now, we're looking ahead to this, and that was a bad Northwestern team. Needless to say, Duke beat them the first night. North Carolina beat them the second night, and both games were played in Greensboro, North Carolina.
Les, what were you wearing that night, if you recall?
I was not wearing a suit. I was not wearing a tie. I was very comfortable. I just had a comfortable shirt on. And otherwise, I can't be too more specific about that. And I'll tell you what, Bruce, you don't care, and neither do I.
As a colleague of yours for almost 40 years now, I still marvel at your wonderful career and your ability to fight through tremendous adversity and keep a positive attitude no matter what came your way. What is the genesis of Les Grobstein realizing at age 10, 11, 12, watching Jack Brickhouse and Lloyd Pettit, listening to Bob Elson and Vince Lloyd, and other great Chicago icons, that this was the one and only thing that you wanted to do?
Like you, I was on first name basis with every one of those guys. And it was something else. I mean, I was with Jack Brickhouse about 2 or 3 days before he passed away. He was doing a book signing deal at Harry Carey's downtown restaurant for a book about Harry. And unbelievably, I was on The Score here during my first tour of duty with The Score. And I was on the air, and Herb Lawrence was producing for me that particular morning. And we found out that Jack, you know, he'd already had some brain problems, brain tumors and stuff, that it looked like he had fought through. It looked like he was going to be okay. And we found out, while I was on the air that he passed away. And that was one of the more difficult shows that I ever had to do.
Our guest is Les Grobstein on The Score.
Of course.
Yeah, sorry, Steve. I want to get back again. Where did this resonate in the young mind of Les Grobstein that what your goal in life was to be a sportscaster?
Listening to Jack, and at the time, Vince Lloyd was his color analyst on television, and listening to Jack Quinlan on the radio doing Cub games, as he was working with Boudreaux at the time. And then in March of 1965, the same weekend that I was bar mitzvahed, that's my 13th birthday for those that are not familiar with that, we learned that Jack Quinlan had been killed in that auto accident in Mesa, Arizona. And he was replaced on the broadcast by Vince Lloyd, and it became the historical group of Vince and Lou, which I was very, very well affiliated with both of those guys. I knew them both on and off the air. And then eventually we know that Lloyd Pettit started working with Jack on TV. Lloyd was doing Blackhawk hockey. The first time I ever heard him do a game was the year after they won the 61 Stanley Cup. Johnny Gottsleeg was doing the games, and the next year is when Lloyd started doing play-by-play. And just listening to those guys, and it was something else. And then there were so many others. I also listened to Bob Elson and Milo Hamilton do White Sox games on radio. Later on, many years later on, I was teaching a course at Columbia College, and one of my students was Bob Elson Jr. And I'm thinking, wow, I can't believe I'm teaching a course with this guy. And I've taught a lot of other people who have done very well and done even better than me for a long, long time. But Bob Jr. was not even interested in being in broadcasting, and he never really was. The reason he took the class was out of respect for his dad, because his dad wanted him to do it. And eventually, Bob Jr., he wanted to be involved in automotives, and he was pretty doggone good at it. I thought he was good in the class, too, but it was not something he was interested in doing.
Well, I would think he could have been homeschooled and gotten a good education had he been interested.
Oh, know, absolutely. The funniest thing I ever heard Bob Elson do on the radio, and this was when I was still pretty young, one time he goes, "There is a swing and a high fly ball down the left field line. Could be fair. Could be foul. It is." And I'm thinking, "It is what?"
Mm-hmm.
And he was a big jokester, and he didn't want to tell anybody if it was fair. Finally, it was actually, I think, Minnie Minoso, and he says, "It's a homer for Minnie Minoso." And I mean, Bob did it like he was one of the biggest pranksters on the planet, without question.
Our guest is Les Grobstein. On his approach on December 29th, he will mark completion of his 50th year in broadcasting. And we're thrilled to have him on The Score. And our phone number is 312-644-6767. We've just turned this into Ask Les Anything. You got a question for Les? Go ahead. For those of you who don't stay up till or aren't up at 3 in the morning to call him, you're up now on Christmas morning, and you're waiting for the family to get there. So we'll take questions. The question I get, Les, is how do you do this 5 nights a week at those hours where your world is upside down? How do you train your body? How do you get used to that, Les?
I started doing overnights in 94 when we were up the dial at a different station. And Greg Salk, who now works for the company that we work for, he was the guy that came up with that. I was doing middays for quite a while. And then in their wisdom or lack thereof, they decided to put the Fabulous Sports Babe on at midday. And Bruce remembers her because he had to go on with her, unfortunately for him, about every week. And I remember Larry Wirth, who was the general manager, and a guy that was one of the nicest people I ever dealt with, a great, great guy. And when they mentioned that they were going to do that, I was walking in the hallway. He says, "I know you're not happy with our new acquisition." I said, "Larry, I love you to death, but you just signed our death warrant." And sure enough, less than a year later, right before the Bulls were getting ready to go into the NBA Finals in 96, that was a 72-10 team, and management decided to take the all-sports format off of there, and they decided to go with syndication and stuff like that. And I said, "This thing is never, ever, ever going to work." And, of course, it did not. I said, "In Chicago, it'll definitely not work." And it didn't.
Okay, but I still asked about how you train yourself to work overnights and do all that.
Because I don't have to work for a living, and it's easy to do. It's the easiest thing to do whatsoever, Steve. It's a 5-hour show. There have been some nights that I've actually had to go even longer till 7, and they decided that, that's probably not a good idea. But I've done it before. I could have done it. I could have kept doing it that way. But 5 is a piece of cake. It's the longest show that anybody does on the station. Just about everybody else does anywhere from 2 to 4 hours. So to answer your question, it's easy for me anyway.
Les, there's nobody I know in Chicago and maybe in the country right now that's still doing radio and in the media that has interviewed more people than you have.
Except maybe you
had a 10-year head start on me. Give me your Mount Rushmore of interviews that you had during your career. Give me the three top people, the ones that you felt were most interesting, the ones that had the biggest impact on you, and the ones that where you maybe even stepped back and said, wow, I just talked to blank.
Well, let's first of all talk about some of the big three of the Cubs. And you've interviewed them, too, and you knew two of which are no longer with us, but one still is. And, of course, that's Ernie Banks, Billy Williams, and Ron Santo. And you and I both grew up watching these guys, and they were phenomenal. On the White Sox side, there were a lot of people I got to know real well there. I mean, of current people, the Hall of Famer Frank Thomas we got to talk to, Robin Ventura. There have been so many others. Paul Konerko and A.J. Pierzynski, and people say, how well did you get along with A.J.? He must have been this or that. And I go, he's actually one of the smartest people and one of the funnest people I've ever been around. But when I was a lot younger, I remember Ozzie Guillen, when he was a rookie with the White Sox in 1975. They had just picked him up in that trade from San Diego involving Lamar Hoyt. And in those days, Ozzie spoke no English. And I was doing a show with Steve Dahl and Gary Meyer. First, we had spent a week in Arizona with the Cubs. Then we flew across the country, and we were in Florida with the White Sox. And I had a wireless mic, which was a relatively new technology at that point. And I was on the field while Steve and Gary were upstairs in the radio booth. And Steve says to me on the air, he says, why don't you get somebody? I go, well, the only player around here right now is the rookie Ozzie Guillen. And Steve says, yeah, let's get him on. I go, Steve, he doesn't speak any English. I said, I can speak a little Espanol to him with no problem. But he does not speak any English. So he says, okay, get him on. That's even better. And you know how Steve was. So I got him on. And Ozzie comes over. And we're already on the air. And I go, Ozzie. And I hold up the mic. En el radio en el Ciudad de Chicago. He goes, ah, sí, señor. Grabs the mic out of my hand. He thought it was a toy. He didn't think it was real. And he says three times, F-U, 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 but he didn't use the letters. You know what he said. And we were not in tape delay. It was live back to Chicago.
I'm stunned that Ozzie would use swear
words. Well, he didn't even realize that it was all on the air, so he thought we were just goofing around. Well, then I decided we were going to get Greg Walker when he came around, and Greg was ready to come on with me, and he was on. And then all of a sudden, Luis Salazar brings Ozzie over, and he's holding him by the neck, by the shirt tail. And Ozzie realized now what had happened. It turned red as a beet, and here's Greg Walker pulling him over. And he told him, obviously in Spanish, what he had just done. And I've never seen him turn red as a beet like that ever. Not even today, where his English is perfect.
Our guest is Les Grobstein. A couple days, he will be marking his 50th, completion of his 50th year in broadcasting. We're talking to the Grobber. You can too. 312-644-6767. Paul in Lake Forest, ask Les anything.
Hey, guys. Thanks for putting me on. This is great stuff. I got to tell you, and I mean this with all reverence, this is the ultimate Jew crew.
Gesundheit.
So I've called and talked to Les before. I told him it's he and Fred Huebner are the only two guys I listen to on the radio. But as I'm sitting on hold, I called with one story, but now I got two. A real quick one. I knew Brickhouse really well. Our families were members of the same country club. He played gin every day. Every day for 30 years he was there playing gin. I knew him well, never did anything socially with him other than the club. But here's my quick Brickhouse story. teeing off on a par three. My brother, Brickhouse just goes up, gets off the green with his wife. They're sitting there. My brother tees off on the par three. It's the fall. We can't see the ball. Me, my dad, my brother can't see his ball anymore. I go, Dad, I think it's a hole in one. He's like, nah, it's behind the leaves. My dad. We drive up there. Brickhouse is sitting on the cart with his wife. He looks at us and he goes, hey, hey, hole in one.
I got one even better than that. He was one time playing, and he had a caddy working with him, and it was a par three hole like you just described, and the caddy told him, you should use a three iron for this.
Yeah.
And he says, now, son, I've been playing golf a long time. I know what I'm doing. Woo, brother. And so he hits one, and it goes over the green, over a fence into the person's yard. The caddy goes, back, 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 hey, hey. And the story was that Jack immediately fired the guy, fired the kid.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, Jack denied that, by the way.
That was the North Shore Country Club. So here's why I called. I'm listening to you guys. You're holding down the fort today on Christmas. Reminded me of a story. My dad had a lot to do with gambling, right? And they were running gambling in Chicago. But we always knew that they liked the bust on Christmas Day, right? That's the big action day. So if the phone rang on Christmas, we knew what happened. We'd have to call one of the Jewish bookkeepers or accountants because they weren't celebrating Christmas. So we always had like Mr. Spiegel or Mr. Rosenstein always on hold to go bail the guys out if they ever got busted on Christmas. And it kind of reminded me of that when I heard you guys holding down the fort today. Keep up the good work.
Thanks, Paul.
Well, thank you. I don't know about good work, but Les will keep it up. I'm just trying not to cost the station its broadcast license.
I know when the true story, when Mitch Rosen brought a bunch of us back, including yourself, Steve, and that's when he said, we're putting the band back together. We all got rehired the same day.
Yeah.
And that included Les, you.
Les, can you stick around for another segment?
We have absolutely.
Calls. We have questions and calls. Your adoring public is banging down the cell line. So we will do that. We'll take a break, and we will come back with more of Les Grobstein, broadcasting legend. He will mark his 50th year in broadcasting on December 29th. We're talking to him about that. You can, too. 312-644-6767. Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. Chicago Sports Station.
Welcome in, welcome back. Merry Christmas to you. Happy Festivus. Kwanzaa, Hanukkah, New Year's. Or on December 29th, the 50th anniversary, the day that will mark the 50 years completed by Les Grobstein in broadcasting. And he's our guest on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline, Alpamonte Ford in Melrose Park. He is joining us. He will take your questions. Ask Les anything. And Tom and McHenry, you're next.
Hey, Les. Tom from McHenry.
Morning, Tom. How are you?
I'm doing okay.
I'm used to saying morning, even though it's almost noon.
Still
it's 33
morning.
Minutes prior to 12.
Right. Yeah. I usually call about 1:15 in the morning for that you suck and bum of the week.
Yeah, we didn't do Ann for that you suck this week because we did the Home Alone show the other day, but next week we'll have it.
Yeah. That's going to be my question. But anyway, I wanted to toast you for your 50 years. I've been listening for 40. Back, listened to you and Bob Verde on the radio back then.
Boy, and Bob Verde, what a legend, classic legend. And he wrote a couple of big books, including he wrote one about Jim McMahon, especially about the time the Bears were in Super Bowl 20. And, of course, there was an incident that took place the Thursday of that week when Jim was accused by Buddy DiLiberto, the late sportscaster in New Orleans, of accusing Jim McMahon of calling the women of New Orleans sluts and the men of New Orleans idiots. And it never happened. Supposedly it was an interview with me and Fred Winston during a WLS morning drive show that we were doing on Bourbon Street that week. And it never happened. And I had to go into the press room, and I had about 300 media people interviewing me. And I thought, I'm finally getting to cover all these Super Bowls, and I get to cover the team I grew up rooting for, the Bears. And now they're all interviewing me, so what's wrong with this picture? And it was it was really weird. And in the book that Birdie wrote, McMahon said that when he came down to finally deny what he did with the late Steve Zucker, who was his agent at the time, he said that when he saw all those writers and broadcasters around me, he knew Super Bowl week had disintegrated into the Twilight Zone. I think he was right.
That's funny. Well, let me ask you this now, since you're both on there, because I listen to Rosenbloom, too, on Saturdays. Which came first? For That You Suck or Saturday Suckage?
Probably close to being a draw, because we didn't start doing And For That You Suck until I started working here at the Score, really the first time. And I believe Rosie was about starting to work there at the same time. So yeah, it was probably a draw.
Yeah, just different times of the day. Different times of the day. All right, thanks. Appreciate the call, Tom. We have a special guest caller for our special guest. Please sign in, special guest.
Am I allowed on the show if I'm not Jewish?
Yes.
Speaking
today,
of Bob Verdi, yes, you're darn right you are.
Robert, congratulations. Thank you for the plug on the book.
That book was one of the best. I mean, you wrote a lot of great books, but that was one of the best ones ever. And I still have it here autographed by yours truly.
Well, I remember that morning. I was coming down. I was going to play in the Super Bowl golf tournament on a Thursday morning. I was finally got a day off. So it was a busy week. And I come down to the lobby of the hotel where the Bears were staying, and I was staying. We were all staying, I guess. And there's police there with dogs, sniffing dogs. And it was a lot of commotion. And I found out what was going on, and I never did play in the golf tournament. But I remember the mass interview that you held, Les, rescuing Jim from that erroneous statement by Buddy DiLiberto.
Yeah, but Buddy DiLiberto is just, what could I say other than he was told about this by a disc jockey named Boomer, went by one word. He thought he was a soccer player, so he used one name, Boomer. And he warned him, check this out. This has not been confirmed. So Buddy, without checking it out, goes on the air. And it turned out to be a lie. And Fred and I, like I said, we were on the air on Bourbon Street at a place called Tony's House of Spaghetti. And Catherine Johns, our newscaster, our legendary newscaster, was back in Chicago, and she calls us on the landline and says, what about this Jim McMahon story? I said, what are you talking about? Because I had no idea about the rumor. And she says, didn't he call Women of New Orleans whatever? I go, no. I said, he wasn't here. Do you think Jim McMahon's going to wake up at 5 or 6 o'clock in the morning to come on the air with anybody? No way. Wasn't going to happen. And when I finally got over to the hotel, Mark Giangreco was the first person. He comes up to me and says, I got an interview. I go, what are you talking about? What do you want to interview me for? You got Mike Ditka coming in here in a few minutes. Interview him. Well, they had to have Ditka come in there to deny that it happened. Eventually, McMahon came in there to deny and stuff like that. And after I got done with Giangreco, all of a sudden, Jimmy Rose from ABC7 comes up and says, I got to get you next. I go, you what? And then I talked to Jeannie Morris, who we just lost. She just passed away. That's Johnny Morris's ex-wife. And she comes up and had to interview me. And it was unbelievable. All the radio people, all the writers from everybody in Chicago, people from Boston, people from New Orleans. And it was just, it was very, very bizarre.
Well, Grobber, I just want to wish you congratulations. You're a Chicago treasure. And Monday night, one in the morning, bum of the week, right?
That is correct, 1 a.m. Real quick question. Who the hell's going to be in goal since the Blackhawks don't have anybody left other than a bunch of sieves?
Well, no, I don't think they're stiffs, Les. That's not
I didn't
nice.
Say stiffs. I said sieves.
Oh, sieves. All right. Well, they're going to they've got several candidates, Les.
Yeah, but you and I are not available.
Well, you're a legend. You don't belong in net. You belong on the radio at midnight, and I'm a regular listener. And congratulations.
Thank you, Bob. I'll see you at the United Center soon.
Take care.
Thanks, Bob Verdi. the house goy, as it turns out.
You want to talk about a legend, Rosie? That's we were just talking to one.
Yep. Yep. Well, with Rosenblum and Levine, and then we've had on John Greenberg and Scott Merkin and Mark Potash and Melissa Isaacson and now Les Grobstein. And Verd calls in, the legend himself, Bob Verde. He's the house goy. And I always tell him, I remember reading you as a kid, Verd. And then he says things to me, much like the words Ozzie Guillen would use in the same situation. So we're not going to say them and cost the station its license. You know, Les, I was going to get to the Super Bowl incident and that wonderful story. And not only is that a reason for the Bears to win another Super Bowl, not that it'll go away, but the fact they've only won one. And of all of the things you've seen in your many years covering Chicago sports, the highest and the lowest, give them to us.
Well, with the Bears winning that Super Bowl, and they should have won every game that year. Miami beat them, and that was a Monday night after the Bears had clinched the top seed for the NFC playoffs, and they did that by sitting at the pool in Miami. And Buddy Ryan, he would always deny it, and I think a lot of the Bear players would deny it, but I thought Buddy Ryan wanted to lose that game on purpose because he felt they would be better off not going into the postseason undefeated. Mike Ditka, who did not like Buddy Ryan, he wanted to win that game, and he wanted to go unbeaten, and those two nearly got into a fist fight on the sideline in the Orange Bowl that night. But that was big. Then, you know, going all the way back to 1984 when the Cubs finally won a division title for the first time ever, Joe Orsilak struck out against Rick Sutcliffe, and they shut out the Pirates at Three River Stadium. Bruce remembers that, of course, too. And they got into the postseason. And then they were up 2-0, winning the first two games at home at Wrigley Field. And by the way, people think because they didn't have lights that they changed things around, that's why they had to have the... No, they were supposed to have the first two games in the Eastern Conference champ. That was the Cubs. And the next three would be in the Western champ, and that was San Diego. And by the way, they're taking down Jack Murphy Qualcomm Stadium right now. It's being torn down as we speak. But that said, even Dallas Green says, yeah, those lights, they cost us a home game. No, they didn't. That game was, those five games, three of them were supposed to be in San Diego. And Bruce and I both know what a horrible weekend that was for those three games. Leon Durham let the ball go through his legs, and Jim Frey screwed up because he should have pitched Sutcliffe in game four, and then he would have had Steve Trout ready for game number five, and Trout was probably pitching better than Sutcliffe at that point. Then, and Bruce was on this charter flight home, and those days they let certain media people go on charter flights. They would never do that today. And we're coming home, and all of a sudden, we're somewhere over the Rocky Mountains, and I was writing my update to do with Larry Lujack the next morning on LS, and I feel a tap on the shoulder. Who is it? It's Leon Durham. He says, hey, man, they going to rip my ass all winter? And I had to think quick. I go, Bull, you hit a two-run homer in the first inning. Without your two-run homer, your error wouldn't have meant a thing. And his eyes lit up. He goes, yeah, man, that's right. Hey, Smitty, if I don't hit that homer, my error don't mean bleep, right? And Smitty, of course, was his best friend on the team, was laughing. And they're still ripping Leon Durham today.
It's a great memory. I remember being on that plane with
you. You were on that plane, Bruce. You remember all that stuff.
You could drop a pin and you would hear it on that flight home.
Remember the flight going out? They were all playing guitars and singing, and they were so loose. And it was totally different on the way back to Chicago.
Yeah. Les, we have another call. Shoelaces wants to talk to you. Welcome to the Score Airwaves, Shoelaces.
Hey, how you doing?
Shoelaces, how you been, man? Long time no chat.
My long time. I've been around you for a long time. You and Bruce, so I've been around you. I'm one of the originals.
You're one of our favorites, Shoelaces.
Yes. Now, I was going to bring that up to your high and lows, but one of my highs is really in collegiate sports. When Northwestern went to the Rose Bowl, then when Northwestern finally made it to
Absolutely. NCAA. If Gary Barnett would have figured out how to defend Keyshawn Johnson, they would have won that game. Instead, he was worried about trying to get a job at Notre Dame all that week.
Yep, you're right, Les. He was interviewing for other jobs.
this, and Bruce, you might remember this. Remember, I went on a trip to that game from another radio station. Remember? I was at that game.
I kind of do, because we did give away some trips and stuff, and I never thought I'd see Northwestern play in any bowl, especially the Rose Bowl, and you got to remember in those days, until a few years before that, the Big Ten only allowed their champion to go to the Rose Bowl, and until they finally allowed Michigan to go play in the Orange Bowl, because in those days, it was the Big Two and the Little Eight. It was Bowl and Woody, and then you had eight other teams that were not allowed to go to bowls.
But this, now remember, I think I won the trip on your show, because I think the question was, who was the only Northwestern player to score four rushing touchdowns in one game? No, I didn't win on your show. I won it on our late friend Norm Van Leer and Les Grams.
It must have been Mike Adamley.
But it was Mike Adamley, because I asked the question right, and that's how I went on that trip to the Rose Bowl. So y'all sent eight people from Chicago to the Rose Bowl, and that was one of my big experiments to go to the Orange Bowl, Rose Bowl, and when you walk in there. Then another big experience was when I went to Dodger Stadium to see the Cubs play the Dodgers, where Gene Michaels was the manager. So, you know, my hat.
Gene Michael, and Bruce was the guy that broke the story that Gene Michael didn't want to come back and that he wanted to leave.
Yeah,
okay, thank you, Shoelaces. We appreciate the call and for knowing Mike Adamley. That's terrific. Well, Les, congratulations on...
thank you, Rosie.
50 years. That's quite a thing of all of what Chicago sports offers, and it becomes... See, I've often said that Chicago doesn't have... Growing up in L.A., I know that we had real celebrities. Chicago doesn't. Well, we have two celebrities, Fat Oprah and Thin Oprah, and both left town. So the athletes become the celebrities, and by fallout, we become some of those as well, which means puts us in the front row to a lot of things that in this city are regarded as legend. So before I let you go, you watched the Last Dance, and that was the greatest dynasty we've seen around here. What were your thoughts on what was shown, what was portrayed, and that dynasty?
I was at just about, I was at every single playoff game Michael Jordan played in his career from his rookie year of 1985 on through, including that game in 1986 when he scored 63 points against Boston, and they ended up losing that game anyway in double overtime that was a great Celtic team that year, and the Bulls were... They had no business even beating them, especially at the Boston Garden. But I remember that very, very well. And I thought the Last Dance thing was very interesting. A lot of that stuff I was at, but I wasn't on camera for any of them for whatever. But the cool thing was when they won their first championship in 91. In the locker room after that game, there was a picture of Paxson, Jordan, Pippen, Horace Grant, Scottie Pippen, and that picture is on my website, and it's on all over the place, and it was also in the Bulls program during their 10-year anniversary of that championship. And then I put in there a little caption, who was that standing between Horace and Scottie? And it was me. I'll never forget that.
Okay.
Hey, Les, right. we appreciate this so much. Let's continue it tomorrow on Inside the Clubhouse, if you will, with Matt Spiegel and me. We'll do a baseball version of your 50 years if you have the time. How's that?
Sounds great. We'll talk about a batch of other things, including maybe the 41 consecutive All-Star games I went to, including Rose Bowling over Fosse in a game that the late Jim Hickman got to hit. But we could talk about that mañana.
Okay. All right. There you go. Well, I love the on-air programming that we're doing. The programming meeting. Les, congratulations again.
Thanks guys. We'll talk with you guys later.
Okay. That's Les Grobstein, broadcasting legend. The Grobber. 50 years. Wow. What a thing. All right. We're going to take a break, and we will wrap up the last segment of the last show that Bruce and I will have done together this year, this calendar year, lo, these many thousands and thousands of hours of tape. It's a
Let's do our retrospective in our last few minutes, okay?
All right, we'll do the highlights, okay? We thank you. We thank you for listening. We thank you for all your support. And we're just, you know what? We're just doing what American heroes do. That's what we do. Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
And I saw a lot of Indiana fans. You know how they wear those red and white striped pants, kind of similar to what the football, basketball players wear in warm-ups and stuff? And a couple of Indiana fans, a couple of IU fans came up to me and said, how'd you like to have an outfit like that? I said, you know what? If I ever got caught wearing that, I'd have to kick my own ass.
That's the broadcasting legend that we just had on. That's Les Grobstein, pulled by Jordan Malley, our producer. Jordan, you've produced Les, right? You've produced a show?
That's, many of shows, yes.
And what do you think?
He is by far the most unique personality I think I'll ever meet in my entire life, and he's truly one of a kind. It is the only way I can describe that him to people that have never heard his show or have never met him before.
And it's meant as a compliment because it certainly is that. You know enough people, we all know enough people in Chicago sports and the hours that he works, the hours that he's on the air, the things that he knows, the places, just the places the answers to questions went gives you an idea of all that's orbiting planet Les. And it was quite the place to visit. Bruce, I love the idea. And tomorrow and inside the clubhouse, you're booking guests right on the air here. I think that's a great way to go.
We have to get the 50-year rendition of Les Grobstein's career covering baseball. That will be a must with Matt Spiegel and I starting at 9. We have a little extra time, 9 to 11:30 tomorrow as well, joined by Bob Nightingale of USA Today, as well as Bill Madden, the Hall of Fame writer, who has a great new book out on Tom Seaver. So should be fun, as always, on Saturday morning.
Yeah, boy, Seaver was part of a remarkable list. If we were doing the year in sports and you do the like the award shows and you have the moment of silence at the in memoriam, whatever you want to call it. Mm-hmm. Seaver, Joe Morgan, Lou Brock, mm-hmm. Whitey Ford, Al Kaline, Bob Gibson. Those were the Hall of Fame passings in 2020.
So if all within a month and a half.
Right. And they just kept piling on and piling on. So if you had Seaver, Whitey Ford, and Bob Gibson, and you're okay, this is 2020, you were doing a fantasy league draft, you just could draft a year of the Deadpool of passings of Hall of Famers. Who would pitch game one for you if you had Seaver, Whitey Ford, or Bob Gibson?
Oh, that's easy. You have Koufax for sure.
Okay, he's alive.
I'm
having you choose from the people who died. Don't kill off the Jew, damn it.
I would have to take Bob Gibson at his peak. I would have to. I mean, but how could you go wrong with Ford, who won more World Series games than anybody in history,
right.
or Seaver, who had the highest number of Hall of Fame votes before the unanimous vote for Rivera a few years ago. I mean, it's a great choice, isn't it?
Yeah. All right, so before we go, because this is our final show together of 2020, Bruce, and when Jordan Malley went through just millions of seconds of tape to be able to get the highlights, it's amazing to winnow down the highlights of our shows together. So on our way out, let's just run the highlights.
That sounds great. And we want to thank certainly Mitch Rosen and Shane Reardon for putting us together all this time. And great job today, Jordan. Thank you.
Right.
Here are those highlights.
Here are those highlights. Great job, Jordan. That was Tannehill-like. That was just to be able to capture the essence of Bruce and I.
I have to tell you how emotional I am right now, and
I don't know
if I'll be able to hold it together.
No,
that took me a very, very long time to do, guys. So I appreciate that you appreciate the work.
Just spectacular, spectacular work finding the highlights of our time together. And it really is a group effort. I want to thank all the little people. You know who you are. And it's just been such a group effort. Teamwork makes the dream work. And nothing says it better than the annual production of this show. So
Merry Christmas, everybody.
Yeah. Thanks for listening. And we will let you know that CBS Sports is CBS Sports Radio. What do they call it? What is CBS Sports? Jordan, what's it called?
Yes.
CBS Sports Radio is coming up next. And then NFL.
And then the NFL.
NFL on the Score. Yep.
So thank everyone. We want to thank John Greenberg of The Athletic, Scott Merkin of MLB.com, Mark Potash of the Chicago Sun-Times, Missy Isaacson, who wrote the book State. You should buy it. Les Grobstein, legend of the Score. And Bob Verdi, the house goy, called in to pay his respects to the legend that is Les Grobstein, one legend to another. Bruce, this has been great. Thanks again.
Zagazunt. Zagazunt, my friend.
Gagazunt. And thank you for listening. Merry Christmas from Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.